you in the back of the street. It don't matter if I rhyme or not, cause you know a motherfucker's gonna smoke all your pot and your girls too. Cause I'm gonna sport the blue to the I do, or rather die or multiply. I get high, I go real high. Stay here, west to east side. JTMR represents San Diego 1904 to the world, baby.
Give me the best. It's like the podcast.
Shoot 'em up, bang, bang, action, bonanza. Get out my face, cause you knows I can't stand you. Get body slam, super fly snooker. Flat on your back with a super fly hooker. I'll damage you. Leave your bandage in the morgue with a pale white face looking like Boy George, all girlish. And you know we get squirrelish. In the back seat of my Jeep, no, I'll get you, girl. And you know that I rock that hoe's meat. It's gonna be real sweet, and I'll meet you in the back of the street. It don't matter if I rhyme or not, cause you know a motherfucker's gonna smoke all your pot and your girls too. Cause I'm gonna smoke the blue to the I do, or rather die, multi high, get mental high, hit from west side to the east side. Okay? Da 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 da. Da 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 da.
It could be the best podcast intro of all time, I think. Oh my God. Another one of your hidden talents right there. I didn't know you could freestyle like that.
Hey, man. In life, you get these times you write.
Yeah, for sure.
It comes up and then words flow out your head and then they put it on paper. You put it on paper and you try to keep going.
It's true.
Or you just keep it in your frontistery, in your own personal library, inside your third eye and the brain.
What do you think? All right, so we'll just jump right into it. I'm with John the Man Reeves, professional skateboarder, artist, musician,
but a whole bunch
of things. Freestyler, actually, just found out. All right, so we'll just talk right about that. Like you were just saying, holding in the art, like keep it in the prefrontal cortex.
Well, I like this word. It's called the frontistery.
Frontistery, okay.
You know, it's with a PH, it starts frontistery. Yeah, that's just part of your own place where you can hold things in your mind, like a library, but it doesn't actually mean that it's not actually a medical term. It's just something that I like to talk about. No, I didn't make the word up, oh, okay. But it's something that I like to talk about, that everyone has a frontistery in their brain.
Mm. So do you think, because you've been expressing yourself for pretty much ever, like since I've known you, I guess everyone is, but like you've, you know, always been doing skating, art, something of the nature.
Right.
Do you think like holding that back kind of does something to your spirit? Because you seem to be like a, I don't know, high-spirited kind of guy, and I feel like it correlates, you know, when you let that stuff out, it kind of...
Well, it's all outlets. It's all creative outlets. So you have to do these things to help yourself stay sane certain times in this life and the way we walk through this earth and the way the whole ball of confusion is, this whole place, the world that we live in, which is an amazing place, and there's so many beautiful aspects of it, and there's so many great things that you can learn, but at the same time, you need to have these outlets to help yourself stay grounded and stay sane in a world of uncertainty.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I mean, because I feel like when I was a kid, like the first time I realized like I was a person pretty much, I was like, I wanted to make a living off of doing things like that, like creative things. And, you know, I almost made a promise to myself, like I wouldn't do something I didn't enjoy doing.
Right.
And that kind of was a tough journey to follow. Like 30 years of not being successful at something, you're like,
but there's little personal successes and things that you don't necessarily, you know about. And everyone has a different definition of success.
That's 100% true.
And it's like you can't gauge what one person thinks successful is compared to what most of society thinks it is. You know, it's like if you're happy in what you're doing, that's success. But it's also successful to have a hedge fund company or be on Wall Street or have your brand blow up and sell you know, all over international to everybody, and everybody want it. And but that those are ups and downs. It's ebbs and flows. It flows and it goes back. It comes and goes. So the thing is that success is always determined by that person. And if you're not grounded enough sometimes in life, you can let that eat you up. If you think that you're not being to a place that you think that other people think success should be.
Yes.
You hold yourself right. to a standard that somebody else is. And right. then, or,
yeah, you're living to you someone else's that. Standard and then not accomplishing like what would make you feel like content or,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. It's just, and that's how I think how society has portrayed success is, you know, having all the riches and the wealth and the glamour and all that. It's like you scream and holla, it's all about the dollar, but it ain't without complaint or graffiti paint. You got to get yours, yo, without restraint, because living this life is a challenge. And like I said, you best to get some balance and use your skills. Don't make no murder kills and keep it tight like a Jedi Knight. Only then will you acquire how to keep it tight. You scream and holla, it's all about the dollar, but it ain't.
So that's all what right. I'm saying. That's
so what is John the Man Reeves' definition of success then? That's a,
happiness.
Yeah?
One word.
And what's that for you?
Being content with the day-to-day, you know?
Yeah, just being present.
Yeah. I can't get into all the little tiny
nooks and crannies
and the, you know, the details of what yeah. all makes me happy. But in general, it is trying to feel not empty inside. Mm. You know, you can hit bottoms, or people hit highs and lows. I think success is being able to not feel that emptiness and feel fulfilled and not have to fill that void with whether something that might be materialistic. Yeah. It could be work. It could be whatever you need to fill with yourself with. Like people have holes, well, they're alcoholics, they're drug addicts, they're workaholics. It could be iPad-holic, computer, internet, swiping, all the places that give you dopamine in your brain that make you feel good. You could go there too much, and that could be a bottom there.
100%. Yeah.
So if you can balance it out and be happy, that's my definition of success.
I like that. So is this something you knew when you were young, like pursuing skateboarding? Like, did you think this way at all, or were you just kind of like
no,
doing what you were doing? And
honestly, when we were growing up skating, it was just about going out, like ollies, going fast, being yeah. free, not being in school, not being at home, being able to, not being in church.
Yeah.
Because I grew up in a church, not being, you know,
free.
Confined.
Free is the best way to word it, I think. Yeah, that freedom of skateboarding.
The freedom that you get from being with your friends and learning new things. And it's a constant teacher. And you can teach yourself. And you can think about other things and be creative with it. So that's another thing. Why? Why that's a good thing, you know? It's like
So how old were you when you got into skating? Like how
around 1986 I really got into it. That's when I was 13. Before that there was some kids on my block that had like boards like 10-inch wide, like GNS boards with yo-yo wheels and tracker trucks with copers and rails and nose guard and tailbones and
the whole setup. Like
they had, GNS was big because it was in my neighborhood. Basically, it was. I grew up in Mira Mesa in San Diego, California, and Miramar Road was this kind of a factory industry like strip that led to La Jolla Shores, where we'd end up being at and skating. But back to Miramar Road, that was where Top Gun was. So if you watch Tom Cruise in Top Gun and you see like Maverick and Iceman and all that stuff, they're like, you know, at Top Gun, that was all filmed near where I grew up. And that's Miramar.
Okay.
And then there's Mira Mesa. But Gordon and Smith, which is GNS Skateboards, had a factory on Miramar Road, and then so some of the first boards that we saw that were actual pro model skateboards were GNS.
Oh, okay.
And the older kids had those on my block. They would go down Canterbury, sit together on the boards. There was no really tricks. I maybe saw a guy spin a 360 on flat or something, just like a kick turn.
Yeah.
360, but that was about it. And I didn't really, and then breakdancing came. So I was like, those guys were skating, but then they were older, and then breakdancing came. But then I got a skateboard, like, I don't know, I guess it's 86, 87, kept doing it and then stuck with it.
Yeah, and then what? That's when you like got met up with the 8th Street guys around there or something like that?
In 80. That's 3 years later.
3 years later?
Yeah. So
how'd you get like into skating with them or even like meeting?
I think part of growing up in San Diego was, I don't know if it was like that in every suburb and every city in the country, but in San Diego it was especially something that was there. Surfing, skateboarding, and BMX. It was just, I'm sure it was like a lot like that for a lot of kids.
Yeah.
And then, so it was like, that was just something that everybody did.
Okay.
And then later, people fell off and they stopped doing it, you know? And then like, but, you know, then there's people that I grew up with that we skated with that are still skating today, which is amazing.
Damn.
And it's like, you know, something that's really special because that's what they love to do, and then they stuck with it, so it makes it awesome.
Yeah. So wait. So when you got, so we could jump forward right to 8th Street, like 3 years later.
Well, before just, I can get to you, I can tell you the trajectory was.
Yeah, I want to see how you like got was there sponsored.
Some
lo- or, like,
well,
you know.
There we had a local. We had some older dudes that were influencing us. That they had, we had this sick crew. Led by a guy named Dave Lively.
Okay.
Who, his son Nolan Lively skates right now. Oh, no, it's his nephew. It's his nephew.
Okay.
It's his brother's son, Nolan Lively skates, and he's got a lot of good clips that I've seen.
Oh, yeah?
But all right. Dave and Phil Flood and Steve Tran and all these other guys, my friends Jimmy Equiling, Mike Alzona, Rick Perez, we had like a bunch of other heads in this crew, Joe Dow, but we had a crew called Flom, FLOLM Skates.
Okay.
And then we got sponsored by a shop, you know, and okay. We would have local contests, and I would win them shits.
Really?
I would awesome. Do good, and yeah? I would do good, and then I got a shop sponsor.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you get a shop sponsor, you start skating, and then
yeah.
people...
Shop sponsors are huge. That's really
it's a catalyst.
An escape out
yeah.
of that, like,
yeah, because
into the next world.
Especially
almost,
if the shop that you ride for is selling a bunch of a good reputable company's stuff.
Yeah,
you know, then they might want to see who's good, who the local talent is, and flow them a couple extra boards to the shop for that specific team rider that the shop had, so it connects them with the industry in a whole, you know,
right,
like that. But that's a little bit after too, because when I did it, I also had like a sponsorship from a co-sponsorship from Primo Desiderio, and that came through something that he did in Vision, like with Vision Streetwear, and Vision Clothing. So Vision Skateboards, Vision Streetwear, and Tracker Trucks, and Primo Desiderio. We used to have this jam down at Mission Beach in San Diego. It was called Big Wednesday, where we would all go there and skate that, skate the launch ramps and just do street plants and everything that Mike V was doing, you know, like bonelesses,
yeah,
all that stuff. Slappies, but there wasn't really, no one was really ollieing yet, like ollieing into things at this point. It was just like bonelesses, slappies, and
so it was
hand
like
plants.
86,
87 to 88.
Okay.
You know, and then I, so back to the thing at the Big Wednesday.
Okay.
Primo, he had like a day where he like had a contest for like everybody, like all the skaters in San Diego. Came to the roller coaster at Mission Beach. It's kind of like that part of San Diego is kind of like Coney Island here in New York. It's
okay.
Like there's a roller coaster on the boardwalk. There's like places to eat and shit, and then there's skate shops.
A bunch of stuff going on.
So right in front of the skate shop called Hamels, Primo had an audition. It was kind of like an audition, like everyone skates. And then he picked me out of all the kids to skate for him.
That's awesome.
And so I started getting free vision boards and everything, and I didn't have to worry about getting free skateboards. And I was really like 13, 14 at that time.
Oh, damn, you were young,
it was
then.
Quick.
Wow,
it happened
yeah.
pretty quick because there wasn't that, like we saw, you know, in the first video I saw was Future Primitive, and it was Tommy Guerrero going down the sidewalk in San Francisco with that baby blue board.
I've seen clips of that. I never saw the whole video of it.
Button up, like skating the dish with the backside early grab 360s, killing it. And then it was Gons and Nadas. We saw that, and then we knew that's where it was going. Skateboarding was going. Like, it was like, okay, we saw the first kickflip. Like, Gons do it over fucking drit, like a channel in a ditch.
Yeah.
Full rocket flip, like. Board goes like this.
Yeah.
But it was so sick. We were like, oh, shit, he flipped it, and he landed on it.
It must have been such an exciting time. Like, it was all so new, and you're just seeing, like...
And we didn't know, because we didn't see it. It wasn't mapped out. There was no tutorials on YouTube. There was no motherfucking Tony Hawk video game or Skate 3 or anything like that. So it was just, like, super new. And back to Primo, sponsored me for that audition day that he had.
Okay.
I was co-sponsored by Vision at that point, and it was Vision Streetwear too. So you got clothes and you got sneakers and you got boards.
Okay.
But I wasn't on the team yet. It was but on the flyer when Primo made a flyer for this is fucked up because this is how I got the name JTMR.
I was going to ask you that because
because. Because it's like, this is when I was like, what? Because I was like 13, 14, but I don't know. Primo was like small. And he was like, you skate like a man, you know, whatever. Okay, so then the next thing I know, I get picked for the team and he makes these flyers and it says Matt Hensley, Danny Way. And those were the guys that were factory sponsored by Vision at that time.
Yeah.
They were on full, like they got sent to contests, they got paid for the contest, they got hotels and all that shit, whatever you get when you travel. I was getting flow, but it was like, it was Matt Hensley, Danny Way, John Reeves, and this other guy, I think his name is Gabe Jackson, I think his name was. But anyway, it was dope, man, and that was the
That's funny how you got that name.
And he put, oh, it's John the Man Reeves on the flyer, and that's And before that probably happened, it seemed like a long time before Hocus Pocus happened.
Yeah.
Before H Street happened, but it was actually probably only like a half a year or a year later.
It felt like forever back then,
you're a kid.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's like when I look back, it probably wasn't that much time.
Far. Yeah.
That much time. But so basically then that was that flyer. That was the evidence that it was JTMR right there. So, Donger, back cut to Key and Lou, my partner in crime.
Yeah.
Everybody, we skated together. Like, he'd ollie anything. But anyways, and I would always try to ollie whatever.
I actually had a cassette tape. I forgot what video, but he was one of the first people I saw skating Key and Lou. Massive ollies.
Yeah. So he ended up getting transferred to school where in our neighborhood, and we all went to the same high school, which is Mira Mesa High.
Okay.
And we used to go there, and then after school we would skate every day. And Donger would watch Hocus Pocus. Shackle Me Not.
Shackle Me Not, all right.
Shackle Me Not, the first HE video every day. And he's like, damn, this is so dope. I'm going to get on that team. And by that time, I had already left Primo, and I was riding for Dave Crabb, who's a dope New Zealander who was the team manager and pro for Toxic Skateboards.
Okay.
So I got on Toxic for a little bit. So I was getting boards sent from the East Coast to my house. Toxic wheels and Toxic. And then it was funny. Back then I liked the graphics. So they were like all like slime ball-ish. Like, you know, like the Santa Cruz graphic guy. He does the ill shit. But it was all like gory and cool graphics. But
See what happened next.
So I got, and they were sending boxes to my house. So it was like, they would send it from the East Coast. So it was like the first packages.
How did they find out about you?
Like from Dave Crabb. Because Dave Crabb lived in a, get this. This is a whole other level of that. It's like, oh my God. There's a whole another level. It was Alan Losey.
Okay.
And Dave Crabb.
Alan Losey. I don't know who that is. Sorry to interrupt. Did he invent the Losey grind?
Yes,
is that?
Come on.
Okay.
You got to learn your history chat. Tell you about. Ask Losey on Instagram. Anyways.
Okay.
Alan Losey, the Losey grind, the Losey disaster, whatever. That he lived in the house with Reese Simpson and Dave Crabb and this guy, Jim Wolverton.
Okay.
And they were like, had this house and they were like, it was so crazy that that even existed. I still think back to this day that existed. Like, it would be in between me skating from my where I grew up to my friend's house on the other side of the town that I lived in.
Okay.
So we would see them at the mall doing slappies and doing all, like, it was crazy. So they had this house. And like,
yeah.
And there was a skate house back then in the 80s. And it was like, that's how, I don't know how Dave Crabb, how I immediately met him or how he saw me skate.
Okay.
But somehow just heard that happened. Yeah. And then
the neighborhood or something.
And he wanted to sponsor me. So that,
damn.
And that happened. And then that only lasted for a year because after Donger, back to Key and Lou, watching Shackle Me Not every day and wanting to be on H Street.
Yeah.
He got on, and next thing I know, we're at School W skating the flat bar, and Mike Ternaski's there, and other H Street guys that I didn't know at the time were there. So, and Donger, I think it was already on, like he was riding H Street stuff, and I was probably still on Toxic, and then they were just like, you should just ride for E Street instead. And I was like, all right. Okay. Then that's what I'm supposed to do. And it was good. And I wanted to do it too, but I wasn't driven by that. I didn't think of it as like something to get, or like how now you know what you can get out of being sponsored or being on the right team or having the right sponsors for
certain
people.
Okay, so you didn't even
people.
Think on those terms.
Yeah,
you
there was
just
no
like, oh, my
terms.
Friends
like,
here.
Yeah,
nah,
yeah. Let's go skate. And then and you're gonna film, and you got Dan Sturt with a video camera, and Mike McIntyre, who films all these snowboard videos that I didn't even know about at that point.
And like
starts
right in
filming
your area
us,
too.
And we just start busting out. Yeah, and we just like, oh, you busted it. Oh, you busted. That's what it was like.
So you said it was Danny Way, was it Key and Lou?
For what? Are you talking about the vision thing, or are you talking about
You said, on the team for 8th Street, you're saying.
Oh, that time, there was a huge team for Hocus Pocus. They had all the guys from the original Shackle Me Not video, like Ron Allen and I mean, there's so many. You got to watch.
Yeah,
Ray Simmons. You never seen Ray Simmons? The guy who does the big chicken wing Pop-Tart tuck knees over the ladder? I'm sorry.
No, you're good.
Over the ladder off the launch ramp?
No.
You
got to
watch Shackle Me Not, man.
All right.
Because this is, I'm going to make you do some homework, man. He can't be doing a podcast if he doesn't know these guys' names.
Yeah, you got to make sure you keep it in the mic.
He can't do a podcast if he needs to know these guys' names.
That's true. I need to be educated on that.
It's all good, though. It's all good. I mean, but yeah, that's why I'm here.
That's true. Ray Simmons. You're educating me right now.
Ray Simmons.
All right.
Ray Simmons. And then Jeff Pettit. You got to watch Shackle Me Not.
Okay.
And so, so all those guys were on the team, and then then introduce Mike Carroll and Greg Carroll and the whole SF Embarcadero chapter of H Street.
Okay.
And that's like, you know, all that time, and that became Javonte and Javonte Turner and like everybody like from up there, and my friend Dan Paterka that blew doors, like doing the best shit like on a skateboard, and like Costin coming down, and then the H Street house. We had a house in Scripps Ranch that was a mile away from School W with the bank to the fence and the flat bar, and it was our training grounds, man.
Damn. And what year is this all going
this
down?
This is like in between 88 to 1991.
Damn.
When the Soldier Story came out, when the live video came out.
And was that your first, like,
the first, big my first, video part? My first big video part was in Hocus Pocus, which is 1989.
Okay.
And then the Soldier Story came out after that.
And how was it filming for Hocus Pocus? Like, was that... Were you guys like trying to film a video, or was it more just like skating?
No, we knew we were filming. Yeah. We knew we were filming, but you can't. There's no. You can't see what you landed. You can't go, oh, let me try that again. You can't say, oh, my foot was off. I want to make it look more perfect. It was just like, oh, I made it. Let's do it. He landed. Yeah. Okay, good. Move on. And then you don't have any control over what they use either. There's so many clips that we've, and I'm sure that everybody who filmed with those guys back then and skated, they did hundreds of things that didn't even make it into the video that would be dope to see today. Yeah. That was their job to edit it. And they didn't ask us what song we wanted.
That's
funny.
Yeah. I guess it was almost like people might have been more present then, because you didn't have as much control or like to redo things. You're kind of just like, it is what it is. We're moving on.
And it's fun. Like,
it's just happening.
You're just writing it as it goes.
Right.
It's not like, oh, I'm going to do it. I've got to get it perfect. Like how I saw it.
Yeah.
There's no seeing it.
There's no seeing
it.
There
was seeing some of the things. Like that's why I always give props to like Nadas and Gons and Tommy Guerrero, Tony Alva and Hassoy and Caballero and all those dudes, Hawk, that Lance Mountain, Neil Blinder, all those guys that did all these things super dope without even less of a recognition than we had when we started to do it and not being able to see what they were doing. Just pure, you know, creativity.
Yeah, yeah, that's wild.
You know, and it's like, then, like, if they want to do something like a bone up or whatever, a woolly mammoth. I mean, what the fuck's a woolly mammoth? That's something that Neil Blinder or Lance made up. I'm not even sure. But it's amazing that, you know, all these little things happen from one movement can turn to another big movement.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So what was it like skating with just, I don't know, people like that are the best in the world pretty much at that time? You know what I mean? Did you feel yourself getting like much better or like pushing yourself more?
Well, it's always good when you skate with other people. Yeah. It always pushes you to get better because you can't, you know, you can't stagnate. And when you see something, you're like, oh, that was sick. Or you can add your flavor to it, or you can do it a little bit different way. Or you're like, you know, so it's always good to skate with people that are better than you or people that can motivate you to try something different.
Right. Yeah, no, definitely.
Yeah. That's like, how'd you do Chaz Caruso's lunch special? Chaz Caruso's lunch special, everybody. Did you see that post on Instagram the other day?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't even know how that came into my head.
I don't even know what the board did.
I can't even word it, but...
That's the beauty of skateboarding, because it's always, you know, evolving.
It's true. So what's next in the timeline of John the Man Reeves? So you're hitting, what was that next video that you were in after?
Oh, okay. So it was Hocus Pocus. So that was the first video that I was ever in that was like an internationally seen film.
And was that expected to be like internationally seen, or was it just like
who knew?
Like by the people running the company,
maybe,
you know, were they like,
we were so young at that point that we weren't part of those. We weren't privy to those conversations. We didn't know what they expected or how many shops were forecasted to pick the VHS tape up, or what, how many copies they're going to make.
Yeah.
It was just like, we had a premiere in a movie theater.
Yeah.
We get our free product. We got paid a little bit of money as amateurs, and then we get, you know, we get premiere, and you get the VHS copies when it's done.
Yeah.
You don't know how many they printed or how many.
And were people recognizing you after that, like in the skate community and stuff like that?
In San Diego.
Yeah.
Yeah, but not certain, like it's still a microcosm of everything. It's not one of the biggest things that people talk about, but you know, and that area people knew.
Yeah,
it's just
for sure.
Like anywhere, you know. And then you go on tour, and then people start to know more, you know. So
yeah, how were those tours? Did you guys tour for that?
Like, not for Hocus Pocus. Yeah. I didn't. The first thing they sent me to this place after Hocus Pocus was a demo in Nashville where I got to go there and skate, and it was they I remember I stayed at the shop owner's house and they picked me up and they took me to the Cracker Barrel restaurant in Nashville. And I probably had chicken fried steak and mashed potatoes or something.
Hell yeah.
I don't know. It was delicious.
Yeah.
But then I went to their skate park and skated, and then they flew me home.
Just
first
you?
Time I flew. Yeah, but I met, like, I think Alf might have been there. Alfonso Rawls. I think I don't know. It was a random one, or maybe like there was maybe Danny. I think Danny Way was at that one.
Really?
Yeah, because there was a vert thing, and then they had like a street course, and they had me come out too.
Damn.
Back then, yeah. So.
You're probably loving it.
Place first I ever
somewhere.
Got. Yeah.
We were like 15 at that time, something like that. 16.
Yeah.
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 Damn.
Yeah, because that was before the Life video, I think. And the Life video, I was 17 when that came out, because I turned pro when I was 17. Yeah.
Sorry.
And that came out in 1991. So
don't
Hocus
crucify
Pocus,
me. I don't know what Hocus the Life Pocus, video is.
Hocus Pocus came out. Okay. What came out before Hocus Pocus?
Shaq and We Not.
Okay, good.
All right, I know that much.
All right, what came out after Hocus Pocus? You just said it. You just said it. All right,
Life?
The Life video.
Life. Oh, okay.
That's 91. So it was 2 years. And
you had a full part in that too?
Well, it was a shared part. Both of those video parts, but I had parts throughout. Like in Hocus Pocus, we had one part was me and Key and Lou.
Okay.
And then it went to just other clips. So we both had clips in Matt Hensley's part towards the end of the video, because Matt Hensley had the last part.
Okay.
But it was like kind of like there would always be one guy kind of highlighted besides our part was like two guys highlighted at once, but the other ones was like one guy highlighted and then other team writers would be sprinkled in there, which is kind of a cool, way to do video, you know, and do that. So you can highlight everybody and everyone gets clips.
Yeah.
But that's how it is now. It's like I'm tripping when I watch the new videos on Thrasher because they don't even put people's names on the screen.
No.
It's just like people are well sometimes, but
I mean I don't honestly watch too much.
Sometimes
yeah.
It's like, who am I? What? That was sick. Who is that guy? I don't know. There's like so many good skateboarders. So
yeah.
But it's like 1991 Hocus Pocus. I mean, 89 Hocus Pocus. Now I'm getting confused. 91 Soldier Story. And if you don't know the Life video of Soldier Story, then you don't know Sean Sheffy.
I know Sean Sheffy.
Yeah,
I just haven't
seen
any of those videos.
Sean Sheffy.
I don't know much about
he
like,
had
his
the
impact,
ender part.
Maybe.
He had the ender part in that video where he was like,
okay.
The good,
yeah,
and bad, and ugly.
That's perfect.
So and then Kit Erickson, RIP Kit, homie up there, you know.
Okay.
Kit Erickson, he was killing it. We had Noah Selaznik, we had Dave Donaldson, Jesse Newhouse, Ron Allen. So I feel like when the Life video came out, A Soldier Story, it was 91. It was right before Mike Ternaski was planning on leaving H Street.
Okay.
From Tony Magnuson, which is the main pro who he started H Street Skateboards with.
Okay.
If you watch some old Vert contests, you'll see T Mag like killing it. Like he's
really?
A great Vert skater. You know, but he, you know, and then he started H Street, like which is the opposite of what he did, but they saw what the future was gonna be.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know who, I think Mike T was like that because he was the team manager that was like getting all the street kids to be on his team and put out a video at that point. Mm. So it's like, I think that when he did the Life video, he was doing an experiment for what later became Plan B.
Yeah.
Which later became Plan B Skateboards.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's funny. So.
And that's, you know about Plan B. I'm sure you've seen it.
Yeah, that's
Plan B video.
Yeah. That's more
when you were young and started. Yeah.
I mean, I was still kind of before.
Yeah.
When I started. I remember what videos were coming out when I started. It's probably like 2002-ish or something like that.
And this is the thing. Now there's a new video every day because it's digital, it's the internet. Yeah. Then we waited a year for the VHS tape. Yeah. We waited for the magazine to see a new thing. Yeah. We didn't have instant free advertisement on Instagram. So
yeah,
it's like
for that VHS to come around.
Yeah, it's like you wait and it made it more, and honestly, it made it more special.
Yeah.
And it made it more, you know, like, everybody was anticipating the next cool thing that was going to be, and now it's just saturated.
Yeah. Yeah, you need something to not be there to appreciate it, you know what I mean? And I feel like in New York, it's like we have the winter, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. So that makes you hungrier.
Yeah, once it comes out, I got to go skate.
That makes sense because I never thought I would live in New York. I loved coming here to visit and
I thought you were born
tours.
Here.
No,
I didn't even know that.
No.
Yeah.
But I was born on the East Coast.
Oh, really?
I was born in West Virginia.
I knew it.
But 2 years old, 2 years old, I moved to San Diego.
Okay.
But so I don't really know the young life of being on the East Coast because I was already two by the time.
Yeah.
We only two when we moved to San Diego. But the thing about the East Coast is that when you mention the winter, the ground is rougher, the spots are grittier. Yeah. You have to want it to become, you know, a street skater.
Yeah.
You have to go like
it's brutal.
On the train and wait.
Those slams in the winter when it's like 30 degrees.
Yeah, you just shatter. You just shatter. It's like slap the cold off concrete. No. I mean, I respect that. And it's like that's way different than growing up with like good sidewalks. I'm not saying the California sidewalks are paved with gold, but they're pretty smooth.
It's pretty close.
Pretty smooth compared to out here.
Yeah. And yeah, all this.
I love California and I always will too. And it's just, but I never thought I'd live here. Mm. It just happened to be this long. And the cool thing about doing that is I constantly feel like I'm on like a tour.
What, living in New York?
Yeah, it's like you can go to any borough and be in a different country. Or you could, it's like if you don't stagnate and you do stuff, it's like you can be in.
Yeah,
hear people speaking different languages. You're like, okay, over here, this food, over here, that food. It's like little microcosms
different
of the world.
Of, yeah, the world.
So it's like constantly being on the go.
Damn.
Yeah.
So when did you move to New York? When was that?
2005. So in between that time, after the Life video, we did a company called Fun Skateboards, which was out of Deluxe.
You were a part of it?
Shout out to Deluxe right now, to Frank Gurer and Jim Thibault. Thank you guys so much. It's hooking me up lately. I love you guys. By that was like... By that time, it was
Fun Skateboards.
Yeah, Fun.
Yeah.
So Fun. So Fun was out of Deluxe. So
Were you part of that?
Yeah, like, that was
like
me,
you were an owner,
Jesse,
or what?
I didn't get an owner because Ron was the figurehead, the main pro from Life.
Okay.
We turned that company into Deluxe or into Fun.
Yeah.
It was distributed from Deluxe.
Oh, okay.
And this was like 93.
When did Deluxe come on?
Deluxe was scene. That's Real Skateboards was starting. They had the whole distribution. This guy named Jeff Clint, another guy, RIP. Jeff Clint was one of the main dudes at Deluxe, but he was part of 8th Street at the beginning too.
Oh, really?
But then he got with like I don't know how all that stuff happened, but I feel like it was all affiliated with Thrasher and Fausto and Thunder and all the great companies from San Francisco, Spitfire.
Yeah.
Tommy Guerrero had a company called 40s, which was like clothing company, like Zip Ben Davis style.
Okay.
And work pants back then. It was dope. Then, you know, there's guys like Salman Aga and James Kelch and the OGs of the Real team that were around. But Life that turned into Fun was Keith Huff was on that team.
Oh, really?
And Keenan Milton.
Really?
Yeah.
Did not know that. Really?
Before. Yeah. Because those guys were on Flow for Life Skateboards.
Okay.
Out here, because Mike Ternaski originally found Huff and Keith. Keenan. Yeah. Huff and Keenan. Yeah. No, so those guys are amazing. But like they skated, they killed it, and they were for a moment part of Fun Skateboards with Ron Allen and Jesse Newhouse.
And you.
And me.
How long was that for? About
I know he did a video in 93 and they kept it going because guys like Eric Pupecki got on that team.
Pupecki.
Yeah, yeah. Before Menace, I think.
He must have been pretty young at that time.
Yeah, right? Ron had mentored and gave boards to a lot of sick ass skateboarders back then. So, but the thing for me, it ended sooner than them because they went on tour together, and I went back to San Diego. And when I wasn't in San Francisco, I didn't have that much say or what was going on in the company. And I was too young to feel really like communicate that at that point and know what was going on.
Even think that way. Yeah.
I went back to San Diego to my parents' house.
Okay.
And ended up not getting boards, and it got hard to get boards. I would call and then was like, all right, I'm not. And then I met up with Laban and Dave Bergthald, Laban Fideus and Dave Bergthald, and we started Invisible Skateboards. And Invisible had at least three good videos.
And what year was, when did that start, Invisible?
That's 93, 94. It's like all that. It's like things happened really fast. Like now that I look at it, it's like, what? It seems like there's space in between it, but it just went back to back.
Back to back, one thing.
The first, because we were on tour. I have a VHS tape that says Invisible Tour 94. And I think Memoirs of the Invisible Team, that video came out in 93. So it was like 93. I was in San Francisco. I guess it was the beginning of the year, and then I came back. And by that summer, we were already doing Invisible, something like that.
And then were you an owner? Were you professional, amateur?
I was a professional on the team, I was the first board.
Really?
The board out, and we had video part, you know.
Damn.
Full contract and all that stuff. You know, where you get paid monthly and all that stuff.
I never knew that.
Yeah,
you
get
paid.
You get paid monthly. Usually back then it was you get a minimum.
Okay.
And they cut a certain amount of your pro models with your name on it.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So if you sell over that minimum, then you get the royalties over.
And
that was the crazy part that. You never really knew if you were selling over that unless you really stickler and you're like in the office going,
hey,
what did you, what did I, like I was like, all right, I got my minimum, let's go skate.
Honor system. Listening.
Like who knows? Honor system. I mean, but it might be dumb, but I wasn't a businessman and I'm still not a businessman.
Yeah.
But back then it's like.
Yeah, you're probably psyched just to be getting anything, being pro,
it was
and like,
great.
Yeah,
like you know, and that's how you get a lot of skateboarders in the industry got burnt out and didn't want to do it and keep it going for a job because they didn't know they never really got anything, or they just got they're killing themselves trying all these gnarly tricks and only getting boards.
Yeah,
you know?
So little,
and or the next kid will come back and do something gnarlier.
Yeah.
And they'll just give him boards. They're like, all right, I don't have to give you money anymore. This guy's doing this for that. Which is, but, and now it's, that's why it's driven to where it's been.
Yeah. Like the marketing
and
stuff like that.
And all the,
brands
it's gotta be that.
Things.
Brands.
Other brands, not even skate wise.
Yeah. Like the corporate thing that came in from Toyota trucks to Red Bull or whatever sponsors there are.
Yeah.
I'm not down talking any of them because it's
no,
a business.
No, because as you just said, the people had to leave skateboarding
because
they weren't making money.
Right.
Now people have a chance to make
money. Exactly, and people know that. And it's going to be in the Olympics, and you either like it or you don't. But I don't dislike it. I think it's great. Whatever. That.
Yeah,
it used to be our thing, like, oh, we are my precious, like,
I just said
like,
that.
They're like, I can't, you know, this is my skateboard. I'm a skateboarder. Fuck them, you know. No,
I said
everybody's
something very similar. Like recently, it was like we just hold on to it, like it's our little thing. Like we don't want it to grow and be like shared with everyone.
Right? No, you can't. I already gave into that part of it.
Yeah,
because it's something that you should not have to give in to.
Right. It's crazy. I know.
It's like, but I know. It's
unbelievable because that's like one of the main things that helped me back when I was younger. It was like caring about that type of stuff. And,
yeah.
You know, and then once I got injured and took some time off of skating, you know, for like a year or two, and I came back, I looked at it completely differently. You know, I didn't like think about all those same things.
Right.
Just go out and do my tricks. I wasn't watching the videos. Right. I wasn't like, I was completely free of that whole like world.
Exactly.
And then, I was, you know, now I look at it so differently. But when you're young, it's like, you know, the end of the world if like a sponsor came in or something. You're like, no.
Yeah, it's insane. I mean, and now that's how I can do what I do now, though, as well. Because I wouldn't be able to do what I do now if it didn't become a thing where people wanted you out. Like, everyone wanted to kick us out of everywhere. Everyone, like, they still skate-proof everything. But they, before, it's like, you're outcast if you're a skateboarder. You're not cool.
Oh, yeah.
Now the coolest dudes in high school are the skateboarders.
Oh, yeah,
and
definitely.
The parents know that, and the parents are like willing to let their kids, they want the kids to be into something.
Yeah.
They want them to love something and become passionate about anything in life, like whether it's art, sport, anything that they can do, that's what the parents really want. So they don't mind it being skateboarding.
Right. Especially when it has the Olympic tag on it. Then it's like, oh, yeah, so he's training to be an Olympic athlete.
Exactly.
Yeah. Before that, it's just like he's vandalizing
like my
property.
My parents were like, what the fuck do you mean? You're pro? You're pro? What does that even mean? That's funny. They're like, oh, and then I started getting checks and traveling and having a board with my name on it.
Yeah.
And then they understand.
So on Invisible, was that like 94 ish, 95, right? And so you said some people, you know, you weren't making that much. Like, were you doing okay? Like, were you ever like, oh, I don't know if I could keep skating
I had my own apartment. I was paying my rent. I didn't have anything.
So you were comfortable.
Yeah.
You could keep skating.
And I could keep skating.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was great. I mean, what I meant before is that everyone didn't get to that point.
No matter
how good they were, they're still good. It just maybe it didn't click. I don't know. It's just weird. Like that's one thing that you don't know. And that's what I meant by back then a lot of people having, they get big, they get clout, they get big names, they get stuff, and then maybe it lasts 6 months, maybe it lasts 3 weeks. Who knows?
Yeah, who knows?
You know, it's like now it's like you're hot one day, and then you don't even know where there's always a new video with a new hot shit.
Yeah,
there.
Something's always changing. Yeah,
but it's that's good because that just shows that the diversity and how awesome it is, and everyone can find their own little way to make a living at it now if they really want to.
For sure.
That's
Definitely.
The thing. That's the thing. Before
I got in, like right at that point when that didn't exist, you know, like when I started skating again, I was like 27 or 8, and YouTube and all this stuff and
was
the internet was really exploding.
Yeah.
And so now it's very possible. You know, it's almost practical to be able to do it.
Yeah.
But before that, it was like, you know, throwing my life away, not going to college or something that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But think about that. If you think about it that way, it's crazy. Call it like there's so many people that went to college that are in massive debt right now.
Massive
they want,
debt.
They can't, and then they get a job, but it doesn't even pay enough to pay the debt back.
Right. And a lot of times they don't get into the field that they wanted to get
exactly.
into. Or you get older, and what you went to school for when you were 18 isn't like who you've become when you're 23, and then you're like, wait, I don't want to do that. I'm not into that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Totally. It's insane. I was watching this documentary last night. Or it's like a docu-series.
Okay.
On
About
HBO,
what?
Defiant Ones.
All right.
It's called Defiant Ones. It was Dr. Dre and Jimmy Iovine, this guy from Red Hook, Brooklyn, that is now like one of the major music producers of all time, and he got Beats by Dre, the headphones sold to Mac.
Oh, damn.
But it's like how much hustle that they did, and they now they're, in fact, this relates back to the college discussion, yeah, discussion we were just having.
Yeah.
They're never, both of them, maybe Jimmy Iovine went to college, but I don't think, no, I don't even think he did. Because no. he was an engineer for like Patti Smith and Bruce Springsteen and everybody, all these awesome 70s and early 80s rock acts. Stevie Nicks, Tom Petty.
Really?
Yeah, like he did help work with all these people, John Lennon. But now he's working with Dr. Dre. But the whole thing is that he is getting a school for music and art or whatever and audio, I guess, degrees at USC. They're building a chapter of part of their college in his name, and he's never even went to college. Yeah. So that's, it's like, there you go. It's like,
exactly,
you,
right.
It's you get out of life what you really put into it, you know, and it's like.
Yeah, I agree with that completely.
And if, you know, and I try, you know, it's hard, but
yeah,
you keep going, and then there's stuff that you want to do, and you're always in the back of your mind, and you know, it's like, am I going to get to that? Like, you know?
Yeah.
So. I say sit back and enjoy the ride and do what you can.
Yeah, 100%. Exactly.
So it's like that same thing. It's like you don't know what. We can go back to the first question or one of the questions you asked me about success. You don't know as long as you go with that. And then people
that's
think
true because it'll go thing, up and down. Like right. what? But if you're just following what's true to you, it doesn't matter where the wave right, is going. Right. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
And the thing about the documentary, this guy staying on the path, he said something about, you notice why they put blinders on racehorses. What's they put that? Blinders on them so they don't look to the side, so you can't see what anybody else is doing. So you just stay on your path
focused.
And you just keep going and then good stuff will happen.
Yeah. That's so funny. I didn't realize that till I got older. Like you don't realize why things happen and like, I don't know, for me, as I got older, I realized it's just simply work and focus.
Right.
Like, if you just keep working at something, it'll continue to rise up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Totally.
But,
man.
Did not know that when I was young, though, for sure. I was just all over the place. You know?
Right.
Yeah. I still kind of am, actually.
Spontaneous. Yeah. It's going to be spontaneous.
Yeah. Damn. All right. So, Invisible, you're writing for them.
Yeah.
It's like 3 years.
That was great. So? That was a great time. We traveled a lot, went to Australia, went all over Europe.
How was Australia? I've always wanted to go there.
Australia's amazing.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's one of my favorite places to go on tour.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you can't, it's hot. It was really hot.
Yeah.
I remember being in a van sweating and pouring beer all over myself. But, yeah.
Damn.
Seeing, we went to like a zoo and saw wombats and koalas and
skated.
We went fishing on a boat. Oh, that I went there with Dynasty Skateboards too. That's later, but we went on a fishing boat. But we got to do things in between just skating.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. So, an Invisible Tour was cool though too because we were there with Alien Workshop. So, there were some dudes like Matt Mumford was on Invisible at the time, who's from Australia. And Morgan Campbell, and then there was dudes like Josh Kalis from Alien was there with us on tour that time. Fred Gall,
really,
which is amazing.
That sounds like a wild tour. Yeah,
There's a 411 video magazine.
Really,
there's a video piece of that of our Australian.
Do you know a number off the top of your head or now?
No, that's too much. I don't know the number.
Damn. So Life Skateboards must have been. Like done well. I never heard of them, so they must have been a pretty big company.
Well, Life
going
was,
on big
Life
tours
was
like that.
Basically off of H Street, but we were in Invisible this time.
Oh, that was
after. Invisible.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm talking we're talking about 94, 95.
Right, sorry, I mixed up the words.
Yeah.
Right.
Invisible was
the names.
It was distributed out of Oceanside. At the time, all my sponsors were up there. Tracker Trucks. Besides, I had they had another company that was sponsoring me. It was Direction Wheels, which is out of NHS.
Okay.
Shout out to the OG Jeff Kendall, who I think he's like the president or vice president of Santa Cruz NHS now.
Really?
That's who distributes like Creature, Santa Cruz, Crux, Independent, Speed Wheels, NorCal. Like, it's ill. It's like, it's okay. Ill. Like, they're ill. But yeah, Jeff Kendall. So, and that was cool. That was a team that I was on with Mark Johnson, which is a super awesome skateboarder. And Jason Carney.
Mark Johnson was on?
He was on Direction Wheels. It was called Direction Wheels. This is my other sponsor besides besides Tracker In and Invisible at that time. Mm. And then there was Airwalk and Dragon Optical. And these were all in Southern California. Like, you could drive. I would just drive up at least like once a month and go hit all my sponsors.
Okay, so they're like kind of in the same area.
Yeah.
So, like, if you get on it's likely you might, like, be, like...
It depends on who you're skating with and who's seeing you and how much... Back then, it depended on how much coverage you were getting in the magazine. If you were getting ads, if people saw you, you know, if someone saw you in one ad, they might want to put you in another ad or...
Yeah.
You know?
It's like the East Coast felt like the opposite of that. When I started, it was like... The whole world was in California, and you got to get to California. Well, like, you're not going to see a company in, like, you know, maybe you would see one in the city or something. But they already had
the ones that were here then was just Zoo, right? Yeah. And Five Borough, maybe.
Maybe. Okay. I mean, when I was young, for sure.
Yeah.
So you guys were doing pretty well, and then. Where did they go from there? Like, you guys are touring and stuff like that.
We did all that, and we had a great team. We put out, like, three videos. We put out Memoirs of the Invisible Team, which was the first one, 93. You could see that on YouTube.
Okay. You have to check that out.
Vanishing Point, which I named, and I'm stoked that I got to name that video because because it's invisible, but I knew that there was a movie called Vanishing Point at the time. I'm like, we should just call it Vanishing Point. That's a tight name. But I hadn't seen the movie Vanishing Point yet. Steve McQueen drives around in like a Dodge Challenger. It's an ill movie. I knew the title of the movie, but I hadn't seen the movie yet.
Okay.
But I wanted to call our video that. And Dave Berchtold's so cool. He was the team manager at the time, founder of Blockhead Skateboards and Invisible Skateboards. And he was like, all right, let's call it that. So that was the second video.
Okay.
And then we did the tour video. That came out in like 97, I think. And then Laban Fidius had his videos of the juggling and skateboarding, which is pretty funny.
I've never heard of that, yeah.
I got a video. It's Caught Clean 2. So if you Google John Reeves Caught Clean 2, you'll see my part in that video. It's like made by Laban. And I do frontside nose grind on Hubba Hideout.
Really?
And kickflip frontside 360 before I ever saw anybody do it.
Wait.
Like an El Nino.
Frontside 360 ollie kickflip.
Kickflip first, catch 180 and turn the rest of the way.
Really? Yeah. On like a hip or something? Or?
Off of a wedge ramp.
Damn. Damn, that's tough, man.
Yeah.
So wait, all right, so where are we at?
So that was...
So yeah, you're doing...
That was in the three invisible videos. And then, so you were kind of inquiring how...
Yeah,
what happened to that, why that company doesn't exist anymore. I think that I don't know how it was doing at the point to where I got to another offer to ride with my longtime friend Kian Liu for Dynasty Skateboards. So
really?
And they were gonna give me more money, and they were gonna, you know, I thought it was gonna be, I wanted to do a company with him too.
Yeah,
you know, so I was like, why not? And I tried to negotiate, you know, I tried to be a businessman. I was like, I want this, but if you guys want me to stay. And they didn't want to give me that amount.
Yeah.
And so I left. But they, you know, Dave was cool. He offered me a wheel and royalties off the wheel if I could stay. But I was like, I already got a wheel sponsor now at that point.
Yeah.
And I had my own wheel and I was getting paid, I think, at that point but he's like, you can do a wheel deal or something like that.
So who else was on Dynasty at that time?
Vinny Ponte, Spencer Fujimoto, Sattva Lung, this guy Steve Nardone from Boston.
Okay, I've heard of him. Yeah.
It was a cool team. But that lasted very shortly, too. It was a short
time. Oh, yeah?
That was like three, maybe 4 years, I think, maybe.
Okay. It's not too short. Yeah. I mean, yeah. You know, but yeah.
Yeah.
So what year are we at after that ends, Dynasty? I can't even.
That, yeah, that's.
Getting tough. Like, 90...
2002.
Oh, 2002.
Yeah, we're in the 2000s.
I'm skating now.
We're in the 2000s. What year did you start skating?
I don't know. I think maybe like 2002. I've been skating for like 16 years, so.
Okay.
It's 2000. Yeah, like 2002, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Roughly.
Okay, so.
Yeah.
I'm just coming on the scene. When we went to Australia with Vinny and me and Kian and. The one, it was 151 because it was just distributed from this company that also had Maple skateboards and 151 skateboards, which okay. was Neil Headings and Pigpen and Darren Navarette, I think, at the time. But anyways, we went on tour with them 2001 to Australia.
Okay.
So that's how I know specifically that that company was alive.
Yeah.
Because I remember 2001 yeah, going tour. There. And I had a tweaked ankle, but I still went, and I didn't skate as hard as I wish I would have now.
Mm.
But whatever, I had fun. I
yeah, was like you got to go
drinking Mad VB. The beer they don't drink like they have this beer called Victoria Bitter.
Okay, never and heard
I
of it.
I bought a whole. I got my own Esky, mate. I got my own Esky, mate. And I had my own cooler in the van, so I could just drink my beers while I was in the back on the way to the next demo. So I was wilding out. It was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the one where Neil Headings goes into the airport and we're picking these guys up and he's out completely butt naked running around in the
at the airport
saying, Rock out with your cock out.
No.
Yeah, he's a madman, Gigi Allen style.
That's awesome. Damn. All right, so then Dynasty ends 2002-ish?
No, it was later. I guess by 2003, then I hooked up with Toss. Toss hooked me up.
Toss
Pappas.
Okay.
From the Vert guy who we had a connection from he, because he was on H Street too.
Okay.
Back in the day, him and his brother Ben, RIP, and his dad, RIP, shout out to Toss and his new family in Australia. He's killing it.
Oh, he's
right
in
now.
Australia? All right.
Yeah, he's back in Australia after his time in the pen and everything that he went through. I mean, I don't know if you've seen his movie.
No.
But you have to watch it.
Yeah. I'll check it out.
It's called All This Mayhem.
Okay.
And it's on Vice
I've
Films.
Heard of it. Yeah, yeah.
Vice Films. It's amazing. Like his story is so incredible. I have pictures from my house when I rented out a house in downtown San Diego of him and his dad sitting on my couch and
really
we had and the reason why I bring this up is because Toss believed in me. That was my phone.
Yeah, that's that.
Okay, she's okay, baby, I'll be right there. Anyways, Toss was like one of the only pros on Vision. So back to Vision.
Okay.
Vision skateboards, and he's like, why don't you just ride for Vision? I'll set up a meeting with Brad Dorfman because I was like Dynasty stopped and I was about to move to Portland, Oregon because all that went down and I was like, all right, I'll ride for Vision and I'll go up to fucking Oregon and I'll start skating Burnside.
Yeah.
And it'll be cool. And I'll move in, you know, I was moving in with a girl that I was with at the time.
Okay.
And it was great. So... I moved up there, and Toss had on the way from San Diego. We were driving. We stop in Costa Mesa at the Vision Factory. I have a meeting with Brad Dorfman and Toss Pappas and the graphic designer.
Yeah,
and I show him my portfolio with all my tear sheets from the magazine coverage that I had from Thrasher to from Transworld mostly,
yeah.
And Big Brother, all the 90s magazines, Power
so
Edge.
Like I was like, I had a portfolio.
It was a nice portfolio put together, but the tear sheets, I call it tear sheets because I cut them out nicely and put them all in one book.
Yeah.
So they're not real toys. It's not toys. It's just that's just an expression. Yeah. So there are sheets out of they're actually ads and photos that were really in the magazine.
Got it.
And you put together a portfolio for it of it.
Okay.
So I have that. It's a book.
Yeah.
And I bring it and I show it to Brad. He's like, all right, you know. And he's like, all right, let's do it. And then I was supposed to get a shoe, and Tuss had a shoe for a minute and a board and for a Vision Streetwear sneaker. And a board. I got like 3 boards out of it. They paid me like, you know, some money.
Yeah.
It was good. I was living off of it. And
up north, huh?
Yeah, and I was up north. Yeah. And that was before I moved out here. So this is like 2004, 2005, you know.
And you're what, like 21?
No, I was already like in. I was already like 28. I was like 28.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I was like 26 or 28 around that time. I have to do the math, but.
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. And then what sparked the move to New York?
Oh, well, wait, we skipped some stuff.
Oh, we skipped? All right. You brought up New York, so yeah.
No, I mean, no. But yeah. What I said was like, I went to. Up there, and I was on Vision, and then this is crazy. They had this team manager named Big Mike, and I was like, this guy was goofy, man.
Big Mike
skate. He didn't skate.
Okay. He was like, the team manager for
Vision. All right. Vision skateboard. So I got sent to this contest. And it was like an X Games qualifier.
Really?
Yeah, and it was in Texas. And I got like, I got like 22nd or something, and it was top 20 gets to advance to the next thing. Damn. And I just goes out of the cut, and then I just got super wasted. I was like, fuck this, man. I'm at the hotel. And then I got mad at the team manager, and I called him Big Dyke. I was like, yeah. And then I told him, you can't even ollie up a curb, motherfucker. What are you trying to tell me?
That's funny.
And then next thing I knew, Everett Rosecrans was calling me up and saying, it's not going to work out.
Really?
Yeah. It's like, they hired somebody to fire me.
Really?
Like, I don't know. Maybe Everett Rosecrans was a guy. He worked for Vans. He worked for Vision. His son was a pro skateboarder, Kelly Rosecrans. He was awesome. They're not bad people. They're great people. It's just funny that he was the guy that ended up calling me one day and was like, you're not getting your check this month. I made 5 figures. Good big high 5 figures from that.
That's crazy. And that was what? That's so good. Lived, at that time, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. That's amazing. It's good now. Yeah. So, wow. What year did the X Games start? When was that? Like, they were around for a little bit of just coming on.
I was
to
at
the
first.
What?
I didn't go to the. I mean, I lived and I did go. I didn't stay and I watched the contest. But the first X Games was in Mission Bay, in San Diego, and that's when I lived at the beach. I had an apartment at the same beach where I had auditioned for Primo, and got on the team Primo for my one of my first flow sponsors. I lived in an apartment on Jamaica Court, like right by where at Mission Beach in San Diego. That was my first apartment. Yeah. I moved out and that's when I was like 22. But I moved out of my parents' house. And I'm like, I'm getting an apartment. I got money from skating. What? I got my lowrider. What?
Damn. You know,
so everyone could come to my crib and I could be at the beach if I wanted to surf. If it was too hot, I could go surf. I had a surfboard and Pacific Drive Skate Shop, which was all of our shop sponsor, was down there. Shout out to Skate Mafia and Peter Smolik and Dan Connolly and Jim and Sam and everybody at Pacific Drive.
Damn.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Pacific Drive was right there, and there was just a scene. But the X Games was in Mission Bay, the first one ever. And Tony, I remember my friend Willie Santos was in it. And he did really good. I think Jamie Thomas was in it. There's a bunch of people.
You know what's
funny
about Willie Santos? He pretty much, I had a cassette tape of him doing trick tips. Yeah. And that was like one of the first things I saw skateboarding.
A VHS.
VHS, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Cassette tape. I'm like, wait, he was just auto? He was on an audio tape telling you how to do
Walkman,
tricks?
Walkman while I was skating. No, it was, that's really funny. Yeah. All right, so. you were, so yeah, you were living in, oh no, that was just for the X Games.
So that was the X Games. Yeah, I was living in Mission Beach and the first X Games, I think it was.
And we left off at you getting.
90, we got to look that up, what the actual first year was.
Maybe 99
I think it's like
97. Maybe.
Maybe, yeah. Like before, it was definitely before. Before the 2000s.
That's crazy that you competed in that. That's awesome.
No, I wasn't in that contest.
But you competed.
Later. Like, that was later. Yeah. I got flown to a qualifier. But
that's awesome. All right, so you...
before that, I mean, 96, I qualified first out of all the pros at Slam City Jam. That was those were the best contests ever.
Damn.
Hands down. Kareem Campbell won one year. Canada, so awesome. The west coast of Canada, beautiful women, good food, good weather. I mean, I used to love to go there. That's the Northwest, the great Northwest. That's why I ended up moving to Portland, too, because I met that girl.
Up at the contest?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. You know?
That's like near what? Like Alaska almost,
I met her through
right?
my homie Maiji in Portland, and Danny Minnick, who's another homie. He had a video premiere up there with all of us in it in a theater in Portland and in Seattle. He would just make all these dope videos. If you haven't seen him, Balancing the World of Chaos, Skate Nation, like guys from Tom Penny to Costin to Andrew Reynolds to a lot of skaters are in his videos.
Damn.
Sheffy, Peter Smolik,
yeah,
Conley, all those guys. Those guys are all in Minnick's videos. But so I met her originally as premiere, at the premiere that we were in of this video. And then she drove me to the airport when I went back to San Diego in Portland. And then I saw her at Slam City Jam, and that's when it was on. So I was like,
yeah, you won.
Yeah. Well, that's a bad. So I didn't win. I
qualified
first. I won the first day.
Yeah.
The next day, I was still in the top 20, but I went out and partied. And I pre-celebrated. I shouldn't have.
No.
I should have just been like, I'm going to do my same run. I'm going to do my same run tomorrow. But I wasn't thinking that. I was having a good time. Yeah,
That's funny.
Now these guys really know. They're like, I'm going to get this money. I'm going to
focus.
I'm going to skate and then I can party. But then it was just like,
Were those prize pools like decent back then
for
those contests?
It's not. I mean, the same. The most I ever won like was like $600 or something. It wasn't that much, you know. But I have trophies and stuff. But there wasn't that much. Like the prizes weren't a lot for first.
Yeah,
back then. There wasn't money like it is now. These guys get paid just to show up at Street League.
That's true.
Yeah, so it's way different.
Well. So you cursed out the team manager. Was that what happened?
A vision. That's why.
And then what happened after that? Like, what was your next move? You're living up north, right?
No, there's another whole chapter where I was working with Rod and Steve James, two twins from that work with Tech Deck and all this stuff. They had this company called Finesse Skateboards, and they gave me a pro model, paid me a little bit of money, but not really, but...
Damn.
Like, I at least got one or two checks from them, but royalty checks. But they gave me, you know, a board, and that's when I was at the end, like at the last part of living in Portland before I moved out here. And the crazy part about that is that's how I met Oscar, basically, because Oscar got his boards for Bodega made at where Rod and Steve James are, where Finesse was.
Okay.
And so when I came out here, we went to skate the Autumn Bowl in Brooklyn one night, and like Oscar was with us. We went and skated. He came to Valley Stream, where I was staying at the time, and we went to Greenpoint. We skated, and I was like, oh. Basically, it just one thing led to another. We were talking about boards, where he got his boards made, and he knew that Rod and give me a pro model before, and then I was just like, well, I like what you're doing with Bodega right now, so why don't I just write for that? And then when they send my boards here, it'll cut shipping costs.
Really?
You'll get the boards, and I'll start working with you. And he's the first one that ever let me draw graphics.
Really?
Draw my own first board. Yeah.
Damn.
Oscar was the catalyst of me. I mean, I was already making art, but he's the first one to pay
That's awesome.
To believe in me to pay for a board that was my artwork on it.
Damn. And that's why you moved to New York? Like, or
that's not
or,
why. That's just or, I mean, part of it. Part yeah. Of the reason why process. I moved to New York was because my girlfriend at the time was moving out here to go to SVA for photography. She's a photographer. Okay. So she went to art school out here. And I was like, oh, and I already knew Harold. Yeah. So I had some homies from coming out here.
Okay.
From on tour. So it was like, oh, that's cool. Let me go to New York for a little bit. That's this chapter of my life. Exactly. No, I was just rolling with it. It's like, all right, I went to San Diego. A lot of my friends never left San Diego. And that's cool. But it's like, I feel like I have gotten so many things out of my life that I wouldn't have had, good experiences and bad experiences.
Yeah.
That all make a good experience.
100%.
It wouldn't have happened if I would have just stayed there, you know? I don't know what would have happened. Who knows?
Yeah.
One of my friends, Dan Rogers, who's from Iowa, he's like, you motherfucker, you should have moved to L.A. What are you doing? You're in New York. He's like, L.A.'s run by skateboarders. Why aren't you out there? The last time I saw him at Tampa, he's like, you should have went to L.A. Like, I was like, I can still go there, dude.
Yeah,
it's like
life now.
It's not over.
Yeah.
I'm still creating. It's still going. There's some stuff that, you know. Mm. So.
That's funny. So that's when you met Oscar.
Yeah.
When you moved here. Tylenol Bowl.
Tylenol Bowl.
Damn.
Ty Bowl.
And then
Autumn Bowl, Tylenol. Why was it? Oh, that's a good history. Why was it the Tylenol Bowl and the Autumn Bowl?
That's a good question. I have no idea. Tylenol.
Maybe that warehouse was owned by Tylenol.
That's a possibility.
By them before, maybe.
I could see that. Yeah. So that's it. And you've been in New York like since?
Yeah, I mean, I've went back to Oregon and to California, and I've traveled to Europe twice, and I've been down to Puerto Rico, but for the most part, living.
Yeah.
It's been
so
in
you
New
must
York
have liked it when you showed up and you were like, first guy here.
There's love. It's a love and hate relationship, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially with the city, it's a love hate relationship.
It's true.
And it's like there's good and bad. Like I said, I never thought I would live here, but now I can't imagine not having ever done it.
Mm.
And it's
do you think you learned from living in, like, I don't know, just in a big city like this, you know, in New York? You know what I mean? Just seeing all those cultures and people and like
I've
all
learned that,
that
you can't know. So most places you can't go outside without seeing somebody else.
Oh yeah.
As soon as you walk outside, there's somebody walking by your stoop or whatever. But
that's true.
Just the big thing is that humans are, you know, pretty much animals. And we have to be empathetic for each other, and that is one thing. And you can see all how many other people have ideas and that are creative and things that they want to express that I would have never even understood or saw in a military town where I grew up. If I still had the same mindset that I had when I was living in San Diego as a kid, but I can't say that wouldn't have changed because as you grow, that changes. And now there's a whole cool scene in San Diego that I still want to be part of. And I want to go there and use the art and the music that I've made here to share with them, with the people that they're, so they understand what I've been doing out here. So there is part of me that has ideas to be there, set up some art shows, set up some music shows and share with the people that know me, that know that I moved out here and that are part of the industry and that are creatives as well. So that's part of it.
Do you perform music like in New York?
The last time I played was with Ron Allen at Max Fish.
Oh yeah?
Yeah.
Like somewhere recently?
And we've done a show at JFK Center.
Really?
With me, Paulo Diaz, Chuck Treese,
what?
Quim Cardona.
Damn.
We got paid for that gig, and it was at JFK Center for JFK's 100th birthday.
Really?
Yeah, and that my friend Jimmy, you know Jimmy Pelletier from the ping pong guy, Jimmy skateboarder,
maybe.
The mayor
I might know
of
him
DC.
If I see him, but yeah.
He's so dope. He comes out and stays at the Butch's Brew with Fink.
I'm sure I know him then.
Glasses. He set up. He's like a
the coordinator
of that whole thing. Yeah, and they have a mini ramp. They have a street course, so we get to skate and play music. And he's still trying to make more festivals like that.
Really?
Yeah. And I mean, we were supposed to do something this summer. We did it last year or a couple of years ago. I mean, I know he's done it more than once, and he's coordinated like Tony Hawk and Rodney Mullen coming to the Smithsonian Institute and all this stuff. He does so much stuff for DC Wheels.
Okay.
That's his thing. If you go on Instagram, he's got DC Wheels, and it's like a non-profit. Like, he hooks up kids with skateboards. Oh, really? That's awesome. And all that stuff. It's really cool what he's doing. Yeah, but so, Jimmy got us hired to go down there. It was dope.
Was that like recently, or when was that?
It was like a couple years ago.
Really?
Not that long ago. I got flown down from JFK to DC. Got picked up in a Cadillac, a day into a hotel. It was super dope. And really? I got paid to play my music and sing. I was like, if I could do this every weekend,
yeah.
If I could do that every weekend, that'd be it. But that's, you know, funny. You get good things and you gotta build on it. But
yeah,
besides that show, I've played a couple times at Max Fish.
Yeah.
With Ron and One time I did an opening, like I introduced my friend Mark Razzo's band, and I did a little singing a cappella thing.
So I know, like, you were writing for Bodega, and you went to, like, you guys did some tours across, like, other countries and stuff like that, and weren't you performing in those, like, on that tour too?
I brought my guitar, but we didn't end up putting that into the tour. It didn't end up working out like that.
Yeah, that could be awesome. It would be cool. Yeah, because we around and
the place in Hildesheim, where the place that was selling Bodega boards.
Okay,
there's a really cool scene, and we had talked to Nella, the manager there, about maybe getting me to play at some venues.
You said Hildesheim. Where is that?
Hildesheim. It's north Germany. Oh, okay. I think it's northeast Germany.
Damn, how was Germany? What was it like there, man?
Oh, I've been there several times. Just, really? I mean, I think twice with Invisible, and then twice with Bodega. Yeah, and it's been fortunate to go there. It's pretty awesome. I like Germany.
Yeah,
yeah, it's a great place.
There's You've a been really so cool many skates. Countries. Jeez, man, that's crazy. And all of the states
from skating.
Too,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, if that was, it's like it's part of it. It's so international now. Well, I haven't been to Spain. I haven't been to South America. I haven't been to Brazil yet to skate, but that's where I want to go. I definitely want to go to Spain, and I haven't been to Italy, but I've been all over Western Europe, and you know, from Austria to Luxembourg to Amsterdam to it's crazy.
All for skating?
Yeah.
God damn, man.
Yeah.
What? Yeah, must be eye-opening. Seeing
Japan twice and Taiwan.
Really?
Yeah, and Australia.
Japan must have been a trip.
Yeah, and now, I mean, it's crazy. Oh, shout out to 8 Bong Man. He just sent me a shirt from Japan. I got it like 2 days ago in the mail.
Oh, yeah? 8 Bong Man?
It's number 8. He's like, he works with Real Life Pillage, which is Peter Smolik's company.
He does this
cool character that looks like a Playboy bunny, and he draws it. He just sent me one of the shirts.
Awesome.
Check my story.
Yeah.
I put it on my story today. It's only going to last for 24 hours, so you better look now.
Oh, it's long gone by the time they see it. But yeah, I'll check. So where were we? Oh, in Japan, right? Mm-hmm. What was it like there? Like, was that like a complete, just completely different from here?
It
like,
was
blew
so,
out your perspective or
it
what?
It was just, I was younger, so it was what you think. I mean, I was really into, like, anime and Voltron and skateboard and graffiti. And it was like,
really?
So I went, the first time I went there was 1994 with my sponsor, Tribal Streetwear.
I didn't know anime even existed back, like, you know.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not even sure
They used to call it Japanimation.
Where would you see it?
Like, on VHS tapes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I bought VHS tapes.
Yeah,
they had a
awesome
awesome movie called Akira.
Okay,
you've never seen Akira?
No.
Robotech, Robotech, all this stuff. All right, okay. I'm gonna have to email you all this stuff.
Yeah.
But anyways, Akira was one of the first ones that I fell in love with. Then there's Golgo 13, The Professional. But this was all about, so going to Japan was like, we're like, what? We can buy this? Oh, look at this Walkman. Look at these headphones. There was no, and that was one of the first places I saw where everybody had a cell phone. They were flip phones, but in America, people weren't even using cell phones yet.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought we were the first.
No, no.
Well, I guess not. We get them from Japan.
Most people didn't have landlines like how it is now.
Yeah.
In America, most people don't. I mean, I'm sure if you grow up in a house, you probably have a landline, but most people in the city only have their cell phones.
Yeah.
It's like they don't, it's not normal to have a phone too. It's like, yeah. That's it. And back then, that's how that was in 94. So I'm like, whoa, that's crazy. These guys all have phones.
That's funny.
And then maybe there was beepers, you know? It's like, so, and when we're there, this like hyper overload of sensory overload, like,
yeah, must have been lights everywhere.
Times Square, but in Asian, you know, it's like really the whole thing. Like, and we could buy it, like oh, wait, let's go get these. Models, like I bought like model cars, like little Honda Civics, and
really,
yeah, like how to NASX. All my friends, all my homies, I brought back cars for because they were into lowrider, like Civics, and yeah. They were into rice burners in San Diego. So I got them little Acura NSX Hot Wheels. And then I bought like a Nissan Skyline model, like, and I put it together. I bought airsoft guns. Like, you could buy these guns with like little, they look replica of real guns. This is before all the crazy gun violence has happened.
So how was the American dollar like compared over there? Like, was it worth, like, could you buy a lot more stuff with your money, or was it about the same?
I was thinking the dollar was pretty strong.
Yeah.
Yeah. At that point, because I didn't have any worries about money or what I was buying.
Whatever, yeah.
And then I also had a whole, like, I brought a huge box of product because it was for my clothing sponsor.
Okay.
I was on tour and it was like breakdancing, graffiti. We went on tour with, this hip hop group called the Beat Nuts.
Okay.
Beat Nuts. It was dope. If you don't know what Beat Nuts is, look at that too, because they're ill MCs from Brooklyn, and so we were on tour with them, and then we had breakdancing and graffiti artists, and then we had skateboarding. So we would skate in the daytime and do demos,
yeah,
and then the graffiti artists would paint while we were skating, and then at night they would have a show where the breakdancers and the MCs would perform. And we would do that for 2 weeks every night.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And Tribal got us out there. But yeah, it was so amazing. You can buy all the stuff that you could, you can get this in Japan. Everything had a vending machine. Like, you could go get vending.
I've seen
stuff
that, yeah.
Vending machines.
It's gotten even more.
I'm sure.
Yeah. Oh,
I'm
yeah.
Sure. I'm
That's
sure.
funny.
Yeah.
So yeah, what's... I can't believe how many trips you've been on, man. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like, so many. Through skateboarding, too.
But there's, to mine, it's not that much if you compare to, like, some skaters that are still, from the time that I've done trips, they're still constantly on planes. That gets tiring, man. It's like, I'm not that mad that I don't go on that many trips right now.
That's true.
But
I can see that.
I like it, but it's gnarly.
Yeah,
like,
I guess just from my perspective, because I've never even been to another country.
Right.
I mean, when it's like Mexico and Canada really quick.
Yeah. But that's part of North America.
Right.
But it's still
when you walk
another country.
On foot to somewhere, you're like, you don't really feel like you cheated.
Yeah.
Yeah. What? All right. Where do you recommend going? One country right off the bat. Like, where should I go first?
Wow.
Tough one,
depends
right?
on what you want to do.
That's true. I don't know. Probably be skating.
Okay, just to skate?
Yeah.
Go to Indonesia? No, I don't even. That's what my homie keeps telling me. Like, let's go to Indonesia. Hmm. There's some skate stuff happening in different places.
Let's do it.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't recommend. I mean, if you want to.
What was.
Do you want to speak English?
I don't know.
Do you want to be able to. Like, what? It's up to. Yeah, it's like.
Yeah.
There's so many good things. There's good and bad things. Like, I think if you went to Europe first, it would probably be the best because you can go there. Right? It's like going to States, but you're in a different country. You don't have, and you can experience a little bit different in each. Like go to France.
Yes,
I had some really good times in France.
Really?
Yeah, I lived in the south of France for a little bit.
Damn.
Yeah. I was there for Y2K when when Y2K was happening here. I had a girlfriend named she was out there named Geraldine. She was Donna.
Damn.
Donna, yeah. I went and stayed there with her family and
that's pretty cool.
And had Christmas and New Year's Eve and went snowboarding and I went hunting with her father and her father shot a pheasant. Really? And then brought it back and stuck it in his back, in his jacket like this. Yeah, man. It's incredible. This is incredible. Like some of these, like when I say it out loud, it's like, doesn't seem like it happened. Seems... It did. I'm like, wait, that did happen?
Yeah.
That did happen.
That's funny.
Yeah.
So now, so you've been, you're living in New York for a while. Like how, so you're not touring with any company, right? Mm-mm. Through this time. You pretty much stopped.
Not since with Bodega that was not 2016 or 15.
Where'd you go?
To Europe.
Europe?
Yeah.
Damn. Yeah, I was actually
that's like 3 years ago.
I was riding for the team at that time, and we were tossing it around. But
I don't think we went twice. We went 15 and 16, I think, because we went with Gorinsky. Chris Gorinsky came and filmed and made an awesome video.
Yeah, I saw, that video. It came out really good.
Yeah, he did. He's did a good, great job.
Damn. So now what are you up to now? Like what's
Now I'm doing like a pretty much full time at Homage Skateboard Academy in Brooklyn.
Yeah. Teaching skating.
It's great. Hell yeah. Teaching skating, selling boards, talking about skateboarding, letting everybody know stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Dropping knowledge on the youth.
Dropping knowledge doing it to me right now.
Yeah, dropping on the youth, you know. I'm there. And it's good. It's nearby the crib, so
yeah.
I get to skate. It's a good day. I can, you know, always know that I can do a 5-0 or a slash grind or a backside disaster.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you're such an inspiration to me. I mean, I just love what you've done in your life. Like, just constantly stay creative and do what you love to do and figured it out with a smile, you know what
I
mean?
That's keep it going.
I don't know.
Yeah, man.
That's the way to do it, I think, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess, yeah. We'll call it here, I think.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, you got any last words, shout outs, anything you want to share with anyone?
Not really. I mean, I'm just like,
pretty much shared it already.
Yeah, it's like, do your thing, and I'm glad that you're. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it, man.
Yeah,
it's
hell yeah. Thanks for coming out, man.
Yeah.
All right.
All right.
That's it. Signing off.
Yeah, right, chat.